Welcome to the Texas Squirrels Podcast. It's our first one. Hey, cue applause.
I'm Lisa.
And I'm Ryan.
And I am the producer and programmer and composer and also singer for Techno Squirrels.
And I'm everything she said but the singer for Techno Squirrels. This being our first episode, we're going to try and sort of showcase some of what we're going to be doing in future episodes and set up some recurring themes, I guess you could say. And so one of those is the interviews, basically. We sat down just recently and talked with DJ Stonebridge, who's a Swedish DJ, who is a really, really big DJ in the club scene.
Yeah, we met him actually in Propellerhead's headquarters in Sweden. You may or may not know that Propellerheads are the makers of the software Reason, which is widely used, especially to create electronica music. And we use it a lot.
For anyone who's actually downloaded this and listened this far, the big milestone for us is that we have reached the halfway point on our album.
Yay!
Which I kind of like. It's a little bit of a mixed yay, because we were hoping to be done by now. I mean, everyone we were telling, oh yeah, we'll be done in the fall, we'll be done in the fall.
Revised plan.
We're
not done. We're not done with the album, but we're working on it, and halfway point is pretty good. So we probably are going to get the album to be done in early 2007. That's the plan right now.
The new plan. I'd say January.
January, yes. And one of the fun things, we found this new plugin called Camel Space, and we fell in love with it. And it's going to be probably on each and every track of the remaining album tracks, because we love it so much.
We're going to have to rearrange the song order so that it doesn't just become half the album, and then Camel Space enters our life.
Exactly.
And now everything has Camel Space on it.
It's really awesome.
It's a plugin. It basically, for those that are listening, they're technologically interested, it's basically a gate.
Like a MIDI gate.
Well, actually, it's a lot of stuff, though. It's got it's a filter, it's an LFO, it's a MIDI gate, it's a bunch of different things, but they kind of all combine to become this really neat musical package that you put on anything. The most boring sound becomes the most amazing sound with it.
It actually makes everything sound gorgeous. So, yeah. So thankfully, we found Camel Space.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And outside of that, Ryan, you just came home from South America.
I did.
On tour with NoFX.
Yes, I did. Not joining NoFX, but yeah, I was making a film with NoFX.
Uh-huh.
We just came back last week. We did 2 weeks in South America. I'm very happy to be back. I had a crazy time working a crazy schedule and got to see touring life from a different perspective. I mean, when you're touring with a band, you're touring with a big, much bigger entourage of crew and guitar techs and drum techs and production managers and tour managers and the band and now the film crew. And it was a really quite a big group, about 13 of us. It was interesting to see the difference between that and an electronic musician who more or less can tour with a laptop and themselves and you go with a tour manager or something.
So we have a new release right now on iTunes. It's called Oh Money. It's our latest release, and it actually made it onto BBC in England, the Asian network. It was the Friction show that played a remix of it, and we're going to play that remix now, and it's called the René Patrick remix. Here it is.
We'll be right back.
So that was the Rene Patrick remix that got played on BBC and also on our podcast now. I think it's about time we play our interview with DJ Stonebridge.
Yeah, why don't we? So this is from about 2 weeks ago. We caught up with DJ Stonebridge in Stockholm, Sweden, and talked to him about his process of making music, touring life, and sort of the state of the record industry right now and how it's affecting individual artists and labels alike. So here it is. We are in Stockholm now, and no visit to Stockholm would be complete without a chit-chat with DJ Stonebridge.
Okay.
Who I'm sure our downloaders know his work. It speaks for itself. You came up pre-internet, so you have a really kind of interesting perspective of how life has changed promotionally and musically as well with the internet.
Well, when it first arrived, it was my girlfriend that told me, oh, this internet thing, you know, we got to do it. I said, no, I can't get time for that. She forced me to buy a computer. And I set it up, and I remember the modem was like 2400, really slow. And I got into this FTP thing, and I saw a lot of folders. Oh, that's amazing, man. A lot of folders here. And then about 2 weeks later, I got onto the net. And the first thing I did was to search for Stonebridge, and I didn't find anything. And I was really depressed. I was thinking, this internet's just shit, you know, it sucks. But, you know, eventually we set up our site, and it was really early. We tried to get other labels. We wanted this kind of, we call it CC46, Country Code 46. And we wanted to gather all the labels. And this was in 95. Internet was that. Are we going to pay for that? It was impossible to get money. It was really, really hard. We managed to get that thing up like a portal, but it never really took off because it was too early.
1995, that's when... I mean, images had just come to the internet. I mean, it was before it was text-based in 94, so that's
right. We didn't really take it seriously. Once I swapped to CD, you realize that it's quite handy, you know, to not having to wait for CDs, having to go and get vinyl, search for it. You can just mail the label and you get the thing. But now I'm in it. I've gone back to CD only now, masters, because I don't think the sound is... MP3, it's okay for electronic music, minimal, but... As soon as you get vocals and a bit more complex arrangements, it doesn't sound as good.
And that's something that comes through even in a club setting over a PA system? Yeah,
definitely in a club setting. I mean, if it's a shit sound system, it doesn't really matter, as long as the bass is there. But in order to hear the definition, especially if it's a really loud system, you can tell it's an MP3. It doesn't have that glossy thing. I think CDs is actually better than vinyl, because you don't get feedback and stuff like that. It's a mixed bag, but I think we will see masters on the internet very soon. I know that TrackSource have started, and I heard iTunes will start as well. AIF files.
Full resolution.
Exactly.
Oh, that'd be great.
Everybody's got broadband now, so it doesn't really matter.
In terms of the internet, it's allowed you to get tracks easier in terms of expanding your catalog,
yeah,
and your sets and stuff, and getting your music out as well.
Yes. Like 3 years ago, I put a lot of my mixes on there. And I got in big trouble with a couple of labels. Oh, I can't do that. Because I was naive, you know, I thought my friends would download, but it doesn't work like that. One Russian guy gets the Earl, you know, and then it's all over. You find it on Soulseek, everywhere, within 24 hours. My album was out 24 hours after I mastered it. I gave it to a few people that I really trusted. It's not really that you can't trust your friends. The question is their brothers and sisters and friends and that's kind of
sure,
thing, you know?
Sure. It's funny that you say when you search for your name, you know, in the early days and you didn't find anything and stuff. A new one now is, you know, when we search for our music and it shows up on LimeWire or Natel, yeah, or any of these file sharing, there's this little mixed feeling where like, hey, we've arrived.
Well, that's the way you have to look at it. It's a good thing because when they defend the thing, they always say, well, people download a shit version and they listen to it. That's great. And then they go and get it for real. I do think that a lot of people listen to it for a while, they get bored and trash it and move on to the next thing. But, you know, if I hear something really bad resolution, you know, that's really cool, I try to find it and buy it, you know, the real thing. And we're never going to have the good old days back.
Right.
Because that was just wrong. Because it was the labels that had monopoly on releasing music. And they knew it, so they jacked up the prices, ripped off the artist. I know myself, because you get recouped everything you do, videos, the pizza man, limo, you know, whatever, everything gets deducted from a royalty. When you get it, it's nothing left. You actually owe the label. even if you didn't take advance. So it's kind of ridiculous. And I think that's what happened. People realize it's just too expensive.
Right.
And most albums are shit, you know. It's like two singles on there, and because there's no real genuine artist development. It's all about the singles. And then you can cash in on the album, and you just fill it up with crap and put it on. And I think people realized, you know, that this is, I'm not going to go for this. I want one track. So when iTunes come, you know, they download whatever track they want and ditch the rest. So it's going to change. We will have to concentrate a little bit more and make some good music.
Right.
In order for people to buy the whole thing again.
Right. What we found is that the album still has significance as a concept. When's your newest album? We hear all these questions from people. When's your latest album coming out? Or have you finished your album? But then when it actually comes to the release, people, you know, pick and choose a couple of tracks.
That's very true.
So we're in this sort of in-between period where the era of the album's over, but the concept of the album is still alive, you know.
No, it's the refuse to let go completely, you know. It's still the white label. What the hell is a white label, you know? Who cares? But we still have that mentality, yeah, I gave it to a select few guys, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's really cool. Everybody wants to have something no one else has. But everybody can get it now, you know, you can get anything. And same thing with the album, you know, you're nothing if you haven't done an album. Because an album means that someone spent money and they signed you and they did this whole thing. That has to mean that you're really good. Otherwise, you wouldn't be able to do an album.
Right.
We will have to get away from that, but still, I really hope that the album survives.
I wanted to talk to you about touring life. You know, you're international DJ, you're flying all over the place. How can you balance that with more home life, family life?
Good question, because I got it down to a really good system now. I bring them on the longer ones. I mean, they're like, they're waiting. When are we going next? You know, Dad, what's going on? And we go to Australia, the long ones, you know. Went to Canada this summer for 3 weeks. And in the winter, we always go to Australia and New Zealand. So I do like 5-6 gigs, like a tour. And I bring them with me. That's the only way.
That's smart. So it becomes like a little bit of a working vacation. You can take some time,
you know,
for them at least.
I can't relax. Going on to Australia without a gig, that would cost a fortune, you know. And I was stressed. Oh, my God, this is so expensive. You don't want to think like that. But now I'm making money, and I actually bring money back, even though I bring them all. It's working out really well, actually.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
The scenes all over the world, what scenes do you think are the best?
The more I travel, and the more weird place I go, like China, and I'm going to Korea tomorrow, I realize it's actually the internet, coming back to that. People know about everything. You know, they download the tracks and they speak very good English now. They know DJs, producers. They're really clued up everywhere. It's shrunk. Before, you went to China and it was like the wall has just come down. Okay, what's this dance music? And they were sitting and applauding. But now I went to China outside Hong Kong. And there's a little place called Shenzhen. It's actually not little. It's 11 million people. I played there, and all of a sudden, this guy was standing in front of the booth singing Put 'Em High. I played Put 'Em High. I didn't expect anyone to know about it, and he knew the entire lyric. This is crazy. It was on Christmas Eve as well. The weirdest experience. They had firecrackers, and they were counting 10, 9, Merry Christmas, you know. And then this guy singing there, it was just bizarre.
You're listening to the Techno Squirrels podcast, and right now we're interviewing DJ Stonebridge in Stockholm, Sweden. And we were just talking about one of his top hits, which is called Put 'Em High, and we thought we'd play it for you. Here it comes.
Yeah.
as the world sort of opens up to these totally new markets in terms of gigs and stuff, China and Korea, is it changing the role that old hotspots, London, New York, Ibiza, play in the overall scene?
Well, the problem with the hotspot is that it's been a hotspot for 20 years.
Right.
And English people, you know, they got so much stuff coming out. It's always been like that, even back in the rock and roll days. They get bored really quickly, you know, they move on to something else. Now it's trashy, you know, lo-fi disco or something. Electro, yeah, been there, done that, boring. So they always want the new thing. And the problem is that they get really jaded. When you come to another country where it's fresh, like Ukraine, for instance, it's really fresh there, you know. They're still, oh, international guy, oh, he's coming in, you know. And they want to have a drink and dance around and all that. It's amazing because it's this international guy coming in. In London, you know, it's like 50 international guys every weekend. So they're a bit jaded. Yeah, I've heard him before. I don't know.
Right.
So on, but you know, like.
So on. So Arabian Night, what's the lyric mean?
I have no idea. It's an interesting story because it was an Italian thing. And the Italians, they never know what the lyrics are. I mean, they go for the vibe, like ride on time. It was right on time, but they thought it was ride on time. Okay, great. So the Italians, they go for really cool sounds, you know, they don't really care what it means. I thought it was a Latin thing. So I licensed it from this Italian label and then they sent the original. It's actually a Spanish sort of Euro techno kind of project. Full vocals. It was atrocious, I have to be honest. It was not good. It was not good at all, you know.
Oh my God.
And this thing I licensed, which I thought was the record, was a remix that some kid had done. And I got the parts and this is the wrong thing, you know. You need to send me the parts for the remix instead. Actually, my mix and Olaf's mix are based on the remix of this original.
Okay, a remix of a remix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the remix was the hit, you know, it happens sometimes.
Todo el mundo quiere amar, todo el mundo va a parar, quiere amar. va a bailar, todo el mundo quiere amar, todo el mundo va a bailar, todo el mundo quiere amar, todo el mundo va a bailar, quiere amar, va a bailar, va a bailar.
Have, you know, a back catalog of like 500 files?
Oh, the old recycling.
Yeah.
We all do it sometimes. In the beginning, I didn't, but after a while, I started to do set tempos like 126, 27, 28, or 30. And you tend to build up. You have done a lot of mixes, and if you keep those tempos, you always have something. Oh, 130, that's really fast. Okay, yeah, I remember that track. And you dig it out. You don't recycle the whole thing, but it might be something. I mean, how interesting is a hi-hat programming? I mean, it's like, or a kick. You know, doom, doom. If it's a good kick, you use it again. I try to be, as much as I can, you know, do at least half brand new. Sometimes I start from scratch. I don't want to use anything I used before. But it is kind of difficult. And the more software goes, the harder it is, because some things are really, really good. It's so easy to do the same thing again, because it works that well. You know how it is. Sidechain and all that, you know, a certain plugin with that effect. And I mean, just look at the Kid Creme bass sound, you know. It's like at least five producers still using that, right, which is done with autotune, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How is that?
I had no idea. It took ages. I mean, I've never tried it myself. I thought it was the modulation wheel, but it's not. It's actually autotune. You put it in the wrong key, and then it goes crazy.
Squirrely.
Yeah, squirrely. So now run home and try. Yeah, no, I'm going to try it on lots of stuff, you know. I've never tried it on percussion, for instance. Maybe something really interesting. First distort it, and then run it through autotune.
Cool, that's a cool idea.
Yeah.
So what programs do you use?
Logic. I had a guy who was a bit of a wizard. He actually installed this rewire thing, but it was just, he was so, you know how these techno kids, you know, and you do this and that, you pull a wire there, it's really easy, and you go back and switch back. I was just sitting there, what the hell is the guy doing? And then he left, and I said, I'm just looking at the thing, you know, nah. I don't know about that one.
I wanted to ask as well, how did you transition from being a DJ to being a producer? Was it something where you thought you had gone to a point where you wanted to start doing your own, or was it more sort of a necessity at some point?
No, it was very organic. I started as a DJ before house music even, so it was a totally different picture. It was more like a wedding type of DJ. You played everything. And then this new music came in, house music, and you couldn't play Madonna and Prince because there were no kick drum. It was so weak. If you had that pounding, it was acid, Adonis, you know, all that stuff. You know, so you had to either play house or the other stuff. So I switched, you know, to house, and I got fired. I played this boat, Patricia. I said, Stone, we love you, you know, but you have to follow the concept or you have to leave. And I said, well, I guess I have to leave them because they wanted me to play rock and roll and disco and all kinds of. Then I went back to house, and then I did Robin S. 92. And I got so busy, you know, it was a phone meltdown after that remix. People just call all the time, back-to-back remix. And I was thinking, I don't have time to play anymore. So I spent 5 years or something in the studio just remixing back-to-back. Then I got offered to play at Ministry in London. I was you know, shitting myself and, oh, I can't do that, you know, huge. It was with Todd Terry and a few other guys because I had an American manager at the time. And I said, I don't want to do it. And my friend said, Stone, you can't turn that down. You have to do it. Okay, then you have to follow. So he came with me. In case I fucked up, you know, he could take over.
Your understudy.
Yeah, exactly. I remember I played some really garagey stuff, big organs and vocals, and people just politely sort of... And I was thinking, where have I been? You know, I was going that direction, and the whole scene was going that direction. So I realized I have to get back, you know, I have to change a lot of things. So I set up my label, Stoner Boy, and I started touring like mad. You know, I did anything. I played for free, you know, whatever it was, conventions, and I went to the Billboard thing, and anything I could do, even Ukraine and weird places. And it took about 3 years to get back.
So when you work on music, do you work like a little bit every day? Do you work on tour? Like, can you write when you're touring, or is that just...
We've all done that, you know, you buy Logic, you have it on the PowerBook, and yeah, I'm going to sit on the plane now. And then you don't have that keyboard, oh, and that effect is not there, and you speak, I mean, nothing is there like you used to. Everything sounds different, tinny, you don't have that thing you used to, and oh, you forgot to bring that sound, and
yeah.
I do edits sometimes. Someone sends me an MP3 and I'm on tour. That's really great with this internet thing. Because even if you're on tour, you bring a couple of CDRs and you get people send you stuff and you can download it. I have Logic Express. It's a wicked program. It's cheap and no dongle. Fantastic. And it does almost the same thing, really. And you have a couple of plugins. You can master it a little bit, re-edit, and then you can play it the same night, which is great.
What's your plans right now? Are you working on a new release, a new album?
Yes, I am, actually. Yeah. I got 10 tracks now. And I picked one that I think is really strong that I'm going to send them today, actually. Yeah.
We can go to stonyboy.com.
Yeah, that's right.
Buy your album from there. I guess you can order it from there.
Yeah, the mix album, definitely. There's a link there.
Cool.
Yeah.
And also on iTunes will be coming soon.
Yeah.
DJ Stonebridge.
Awesome. Thanks.
That was the Stonebridge interview. DJ Stonebridge from Sweden.
One of the things that we're going to be doing on our podcast is we want to kind of offer people who listen to our finished products a window into how they began. So we thought we'd do that with our first release, which was Mute. We're going to show you sort of how the song began. A lot of the songs begin with Lisa writing songs. Lisa plays guitar and sings, obviously, on the tracks, but she's a songwriter. She writes the melodies and the lyrics and all that. This is Mute, as played by Lisa on her guitar into her dictaphone. They begin with Lisa's demos, and then Lisa will usually produce it up into being more of a fleshed out electronic idea, and then it comes over to me, and then I kind of do a little bit of the electronic production as well, and we kind of pass that back and forth, balance it out until we've developed it into a song.
So this track's actually when I've put it into a Reason file and I'm singing over it, so it's a little bit more developed like that, but it's completely different from the final product and different beat and everything, so that's often how it goes. So here it is.
A lot of times we end up with libraries of electronic ideas and then these sort of rough recordings that Lisa has, and the whole process becomes finding the marriage between those two, what rough recording works with what electronic idea and so forth. Mm-hmm. That was the demo, and as we go out today, we're going to leave you with the finished version of Mute, which is what the song finally became. And we're going to get back to our album, because we have another half an album to do.
We have a lot of work, so we're going to get back to working on that.
But if we go stir crazy in the studio, you'll probably be hearing another episode from us before everything's done.
Yep. Hopefully not, though.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully next one we will have an album out as well for you guys. So yeah, thank you so much for all support from everyone, and hope you enjoyed our podcast. We'll talk to you later.
And see you soon.
Bye. Thank you.